Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and the national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Monday, February 4th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and you guessed it, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. And you can find all the great Ware products here. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. As the chat room is filling up today on this awesome, marvelous Monday show, we thank you very much for tuning in. Let me just go ahead first thing and send out some shout-outs. We want to say give a shout-out to all the people listening live all across the world. Including all the folks that are able to get into the chat room today. I know sometimes it can get frustrating as that little circle spins and spins and spins as you're trying to get in like everybody else. So thank you very much to our live listeners. Thank you to the ones that are in the chat room live. I think it'll be a lively chat room today. We thank you. And really to all those folks that can't get in the chat room or your work won't allow it because they have it turned off, hey, thank you very much for tuning in. All the over-the-road truck drivers that listen to the show and we hear from, you listen to the show mainly the archives 24/7. Thank you very much for tuning in. Keep the rubber on the road, and we thank you for what you do. All the homeschoolers that use this show as a part of their curriculum, thank you very much for tuning in today. And all the feed and seed stores across the country that stream this radio show live for their customers every day at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. So thank you very much, all of you, for tuning in live today. It is Marvelous Monday. We have a great show for you. It's Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. He'll be joining us here shortly, and we're going to be talking all about the comb today, everything from regarding the comb, regarding reproduction, to let's see, circulation, to even frostbitten combs and how to treat those, how to prevent those. So all about the scientific function of the comb. So how cool is that? The last couple of episodes we did, it was all about the feather. Great information about the feather. You can go back and listen to those archive shows too. There was a part one and a part two. And today we're talking all about the comb. So I'm sure you'll want to get your Chicken Whisperer notebooks out and get ready for all of that. Yes, someone asked in the chat room, how you doing? And I was like, a little bit stressed today. Everything seems to come along at one time. It's either all or nothing. Kind of like back in my paramedic days, it was just all nice and calm until it hit the fan, and then you were running rampant. But everything's, you know, again, it's our busy season. It normally starts around November, people getting ready for Chick Days events. Seems like Chick Days events start earlier and earlier and earlier each year. I know the Tractor Supply events are starting February the 11th this year, a couple of weeks earlier than before. So if you live in the Southeast, then your Tractor Supply stores are going to be getting some chicks probably either around the 11th or the 18th of February. So stop by your local Tractor Supply and take a look at their Chick Days events there. But speaking of that, they will be here. Our video production company will be here at the homestead. They'll be arriving tomorrow morning, all day tomorrow, all day Wednesday. We'll be recording some scripts and shooting some video, which will include here at the homestead as well as at a local Tractor Supply store. We're doing, I believe it's 8 more informational videos for their website. We've done 5. They're already there at tractorsupply.com/chickdays. And so we'll try to get these next 8 completed and shot anyway and film tomorrow and Wednesday, and then they'll get produced, and we hope that they'll be on the website no later, really, sometime between the 11th and the 18th for Chick Day. So that is very, very, very cool. A little stressed out about that. I've got all the scripts written and the information and props and things like that. So we'll be busy camp for the next couple of days. And then, of course, we got the big Power to the Poultry 2013 Chicken Whisperer Tour with Tractor Supply coming up. It'll be in Lower Alabama. Yeah, moving on up. We're heading to L.A., Lower Alabama, and the Pensacola, kind of the panhandle part of Florida. And I can, let me see if I can remember and give you the dates and the locations. And basically, the events are going to include a two-hour Getting Started with Backyard Poultry workshop, a little bit about everything you need to know about starting your flocks and your baby chicks right this year. It'll include a book signing, autographs, pictures, questions and answers. It's going to be awesome. And then on a Saturday show, it'll include a live broadcast on location from the Tractor Supply. So this is just one of the first quarter tour. We'll be doing four one per quarter Power to the Poultry tours each year. That's just with Tractor Supply, and that's on top of all the others that we do when we travel all over the country. We're looking at getting maybe out to Texas here this late spring, maybe in May, up to the Midwest, Kentucky and Missouri, and Ohio, possibly make kind of a loop, and just spreading the chicken love like we love to do. So we got all that going on. And hopefully we'll be able to see you at one of the upcoming events as well. Speaking of events, I know Pat Foreman's got one coming up here. I believe it is in March, which let me see if I've got the dates here. I think it's March 2nd and 3rd, chickensandyou.com. You can go take a look at the events that they have over there. I think it's a two-day class. I believe lunch is provided both days. Breakfast is on you. And it'll be chock full of all kinds of information, anywhere from how to cook eggs to, again, how to relate with your chicken. I think there's a chicken whispering class, and there's, again, just about anything you'd ever want to know. Two-day class, all day Saturday and all day Sunday. Again, that's chickensandyou.com, so make sure to check those events out as well. I think the first one's in Virginia Beach, where they currently do not allow chickens. But maybe they'll have some folks that'll attend and get educated on all about chickens up there in Virginia Beach. So take a look at that, chickensandyou.com. Let's see. So the issue here is tomorrow, with us doing these Tractor Supply videos and whatnot, there will more than likely not be a radio show tomorrow. They'll be arriving about 11, so it'll be kind of hectic around here. We're going to shoot most of the day. I think the first thing I'll do is record every single, in a quiet place, record every single script. And then we'll go and take pieces of script and do them live with props and things like that. But at least I'll have a recording of every single script on file if they need be, or to overlay pictures and things. So tomorrow, I can tell you, more than likely, no radio show. Now, Wednesday is a different story. We will have all day Wednesday to film, so there may be a possibility that I can take a break, have lunch, and join all of you who tune in live every day on Wednesday. It's a great episode, Garden-Wise Living with Arlena, which comes on twice a month, talks about year-round gardening. Very appropriate, because I'm trying to this week. I've already, we harrowed the garden, a big one-acre garden we have. We harrowed that, I believe it was on Saturday. And it looks beautiful, and it's ready to plant. Yeah, I know that a lot of y'all still have snow on the ground, and I'm sorry. But basically down here in the Deep South, around Valentine's Day, we're looking at putting in an early spring crop. So right now for us, it's going to be a smaller, because we're traveling a lot, it's going to be a smaller. We're putting in some onion sets, or potatoes. Probably towards the end of February, some broccoli and cauliflower, and that's probably about it. Normally, I'll do a whole set of greens and beets and carrots and all that kind of stuff, but not this year for our early fall or early spring garden. So just a few things, but try to get that in the ground as well. But she'll be here this Wednesday. I'm going to try my best to do the show on Wednesday with Garden-Wise Living with Arlena, coming to learn about year-round gardening. Yes, you should start getting those garden catalogs in the mail if you haven't already. This coming Thursday is going to be a great show. We've got Dr. Bridget McRae, PhD, poultry scientist and professor. She'll be here this Thursday the 7th, and then it looks like we'll have a fun Friday episode this Friday the 8th. So chock full of awesome information, guests, and shows this week, but it looks like tomorrow we just may not have a show for tomorrow because of the filming. So I just wanted to let you all know that. I know a lot of you, when there's no show, you'll get concerned and make sure everything's okay with me and things like that. And so I just wanted to kind of give you that pre-warning there. Got a really cool card. I think it's on the kitchen table. Someone sent me they were an artist, and they took a beautiful picture with a little caption on it, and it was real nice. Got it in the mail today when I was checking my mail. I said, hey, Chicken Whisperer, you know, I love the show. Chickens are very photogenic, and here's a picture that I took, you know, and I hope you like it. And there's a little greeting card type of thing, or stationery, if you will. And it was real nice. I may try to snap a picture of that and share it on our Facebook page later this afternoon, because it was a nice picture. She does nice work. Maybe she's listening today. I appreciate you sending that over over to me. So we've got the show this week that's looking good. We've got Peter Brown coming on today, the chicken doctor. And so we're anxious to bring him on live as well when he gets in. We're talking all about the comb. It's going to be really an awesome show today. So hope you're all doing well. Become a fan on Facebook, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer. I'm going to head over there now to our Facebook page and see if much of anything is really going over there. I know that also today, a couple of cool things today. This is a busy day. It just adds to the stress. Today during the show, today, sometime during the show today, maybe after a commercial break, before a commercial break, who knows, we are going to be giving away a chicken fountain watering system, yep, here on today's radio show. So one of you listening live, whether you're in the chat room or not, you're listening live today, you will have a chance to win a chicken fountain watering system from chickenfountain.com. It'll be your choice of size, and there's some science that goes behind that. You may say, oh, man, I want the most expensive one and the biggest one, but that's not scientifically the one you might need for the number of chickens you have in your flock, because you want them to turn that water over on a quick basis. So you know, if it's too big, they won't be turning that water over that's contained in the chicken fountain fast enough. You want to make sure they have the freshest water. So there is scientific reasoning of why, even if you have a pretty large flock, you may not need or require the largest chicken fountain they've got. I know you want to get the best prize and the best bang for your buck, but it may not be the best for your flock. So Frank over at the Chicken Fountain, chickenfountain.com, he will, when we get him the winner's information, explain to you how all of that works. And you can go visit them now at chickenfountain.com and see what they're all about. But one lucky listener today. Also, I guess I can go ahead and announce it now. I'm not quite 100% prepared. I did work on it this morning a little bit, clearing some mailboxes and getting the email reply and things like that. But today we are starting, and it will start today, and I'll officially start it on Facebook a little later, but if you want to go ahead and get a jump on it, that's fine. We are giving away another chicken coop. How cool is that? More than anybody on the planet, right here, Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We've given away, gosh, I don't know, this is our fifth year of broadcasting this radio show, and we give one at least every other month away. And then sometimes, like in October, we gave away two chicken coops. Coops in the month of October. So, but for the month of February, we're giving away another awesome chicken coop provided by our friends over at mypetchicken.com, Derek and Tracy. And I posted last week about the contest and posted a picture of the bungalow, but they are sold out. So we are going to use the Four Square, which is a nice coop. That's the one we normally give away, is the Four Square. They do have some of those left. The springtime, people are buying things up like crazy, so good for them over at mypetchicken.com. But today we'll start another awesome chicken coop contest. And, you know, me and Jen were talking about yesterday about, you know, having different types of fun contests. And we're going to do this here, maybe in, let's see, February, maybe in April. When we give away another chicken coop, we'll probably take a break in March. Baby's due in March. Things will be going on crazy, getting ready for the next Chicken Whisperer tour. But we're thinking maybe in April we'll give away another chicken coop from mypetchicken.com. And we thought of a contest. Jen thought of a contest, mind you, where instead of doing the passwords like we've done in the past, where every day we announce a password on the radio show, we post it on Twitter, we post it on Facebook, you collect the passwords, then you call in, and if you have all the passwords correct, you win. That's fun. People love that contest. But we were talking about maybe every day issuing a letter. Today's secret letter is A or B or F or J or S. And so we'll issue, however many days the contest is, okay, we'll issue one letter, okay? Now, what will that letter, and all the letters will end up spelling something. They won't be in order, like the first letter is C, the second day it's H, and then it spells chicken. No, it'll just be a series of random letters, and then you, the contestant, you have to play around and make a word or a statement or a sentence or a phrase, if you will, with those letters that will all be jumbled up. So it may be, who knows, you know, nesting box or chicken coops or whatever the case may be, just random letters. And then you'll have to, you'll collect the letters. and then you'll actually have to, and then what you'll do is you'll email. Once it's done, everybody will email me the phrase that you think the letters unjumbled that you've kind of mixed in. Email the phrase, and then you can, and then we'll take the winner. Everybody who emails the correct phrase will be entered, and we'll draw a winner from the total number of people that got it correct. So we thought about that, but I wasn't prepared for that for this month. It's crazy enough as it is. So we've got that coming up. So let me just explain to you. I'll go ahead and say it on the radio show today. Y'all can get a head start. It doesn't make you any more eligible to win or not. I wasn't going to do the password collection because I know we're going to be on the road for a week here in February. We've got, you know, some shows we won't be doing because shooting videos, things like that. So we still wanted everybody to be eligible to win. Twitter, Facebook, live radio show listeners, archive listeners, things like that. So to enter, very, very simple. And I'll create a big banner or a PowerPoint thing that I'll share so it'll look good on Facebook to give you all the official rules and details. But, you know, it's basically one entry per household. So if you and your husband live in the same house, you can enter once. But if grandma lives next door and has her own physical address, you can enter her. If you have cousins that live in New York and you live in California and they don't care about chickens, you can have them enter for you. And then if they win, then they can have me ship the coop to you. You know, so but one entry per household is the main rule. Okay. And so you basically, to enter, send us an email. Okay, now I'm going to go through this. You remember this back in October, I think it was, we had the same contest. So everybody is eligible to win. So very, very simple. To enter the chicken coop contest, one entry per household, all you have to do is send us an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. Okay, send me an email, contest@chickenwhisperer.net. In the subject line of the email, put coop contest. Okay. In the subject line of the email, put coop contest. In the email itself, I need your name, your shipping address, and your phone number. If your phone number is missing, I'll delete it. If your address is missing, I'll delete it. If your name is missing, I'll delete it. Okay. Name, shipping address, and phone number. Okay, I just cleared that mailbox. I didn't save all your information. I basically hit delete 2,000 times, 3,000 times, however many people entered the last contest. We don't save those. I don't save those. I don't sell those. They get deleted. Okay, I don't have a place for them. I don't have a need for them right now. So your information isn't shared. It is deleted. I spent all morning deleting all of the other entries. So the issue there, again, to enter the February 2013 MyPetChicken.com Chicken Whisperer Chicken Coop Contest, very simple, send me an email, contest@chickenwhisperer.net. In the subject line of the email, put coop contest. And then in the email itself, I need three things, your name, your shipping address, and your phone number. Okay. You do not have to be listening to win. I haven't even looked at the official date of when this will end because we will be on tour towards the end of February. So all that will be officially posted on our Facebook and Twitter pages later this afternoon. Okay, and but the official contest starts today, Monday, February 4th. It'll end sometime towards the end of the end of February. And what we will do is we will call the winner live on the radio show. You will not have to be listening live the day of the contest. If I don't get in touch with you, if I get your voicemail, not a big deal. If it's a busy signal or it rings and rings and rings, no problem. You will still win. I will still email you that you won. I will call you and tell you that you won. I will get your shipping information to Derek over at MyPetChicken.com that you won. But you do not have to be listening live to win when we give the coop away. But I will try to call you live on the radio. The final day of the contest when we choose our winner, and we will give you a call, but you do not have to be listening live to win. Like with our password collection contest, you have to be listening live to win because you call in and then recite all those secret passwords. So you don't have to be listening to win. So no problems regarding all of that. So no worries. Alrighty. So, hey, it looks like Peter Brown has called. It's a pleasure to welcome him live to the radio show. And Peter Brown, thank you very much for calling in today. We're lucky to have you.
Hey, Andy. How are you doing?
Sweeter than snuff and half as dusty.
So hanging in there, a little stressful with everything that's going on. It's a busy season, but you know how it is.
Oh, yeah.
So, but just, hey, one day at a time, one second at a time, do what you can, and still try to, you know, spend a little time with the family, because that's the most important thing. So I know everybody is thrilled and looking forward to today's show. We've got we had all about the feather the last two episodes. People can go back and listen to the archive of that. Today, can't come too soon, all about the comb, like you and I were talking about, how the comb can affect reproduction and mating, all the way to circulation, to, you know, frostbitten combs and causes and preventions and treatments and things like that. So all about the comb. Everybody's excited. All of our chickens, last time I checked, had combs. Some are bigger than others. And so we're definitely looking forward. We've got our Chicken Whisperer books open and ready to take tons of notes.
Okay. Most people, you know, when we think about the comb, I don't think most of us anyway think beyond the either the size of the comb, whether or not the comb's standing up, laying down, or the color of the comb. I've often heard people, you know, talk about the comb, you know, isn't it beautiful, it's so red, it's so bright, it's so clean looking, all of these little accolades put to it. But, you know, I thought I would, you know, in the scheme of things of talking about, you know, trying to keep the comb from freezing and so on, you know, that I would go into a little bit of, you know, just what and the comb makes up, or makes up the comb itself. It's actually quite an organ, and most people, again, we don't think of it as an organ, a functioning part of the bird's system, but it is truly that, and then some, very unique, and very what we call highly vascularized, meaning the amount and size of blood vessels that are in the comb are quite a few. How they're laid out is kind of an interesting thing. If you look at the comb, basically you're looking at roughly three different sections of the comb. You're looking at the epidermis, which when we talk about the integumentary system of the bird, which was the skin and so on, this is the surface covering, or the very tips, or the very edges of the comb. And that in and of itself is not very deep, but it is the least vascularized. And by vascularization, you know, it's a big, big word with really a not so great huge meaning, other than means there's blood vessels there of some description and some kind. So it doesn't surprise me that when we see, you know, a bird's comb freeze, it's out at the very edge where it usually starts. You get down into the middle of the comb, basically, the comb gets thicker, the vascularization is even more dense, and the blood flow is higher and less likely to freeze, you know, at that point. But that being said, if you have ever seen how they lay out rebar, if anybody's familiar with that, I picked that because it sticks in my mind as something that most people have been going down a highway, and you've seen it in building bridges and building concrete roads, where they put these various metal bars across the area where they're going to put the concrete in, and they're generally parallel to each other, vertical and so on, and they're tied together. Well, while the blood vessels aren't necessarily tied together, they do run in the same fashion across the width of the comb, okay, or the thickness of the comb. You would find your arteries and your veins and this type of thing, and they would be more down in what we call the central layer. We had the epidermis at the top, and when we had the central layer being in the middle, which is a little bit thicker. But then running the other ways, you would have all of these capillary blood vessels. You would have arterioles, which are little offshoots from the arteries and veins and sinus capillaries, which are even smaller yet. And this is all part, these little things, capillaries, arterioles, sinus capillaries, and these types of things are all what we call microcirculation. Humans have a lot of these things in their body as well. Your heart contains a lot of them, your brain, and this kind of thing. And their job is to get blood out to, obviously, all parts of the tissue, in the comb being tissue. These things run all over each other. Some touch, some don't touch. An artery may be laying next to a vein, and there is a heat exchange of heat, especially during the summer months, carrying the heat to the comb and it being cooled somewhat by the ambient air temperature, and then the vein bringing the cooled blood back to the heart and lungs and what have you for recirculation. So it's really an interesting network of blood vessels. The the main artery for supplying, I'm not going to go into each and every one of these, it would take all day. There's so many little tiny blood vessels, and most of them have a name of some sort. I don't think that part of it is quite as important as to know that directly under the comb at the base of the skull and all along that point, there is a major artery that runs there, and it is responsible for providing the majority of the blood to the comb. And this is probably, I'm sure, why when we dub birds, they bleed profusely, and you need to control that bleeding very quickly or a bird will bleed out on you. Because of that artery being very close to the surface there, and then again these artery shoots up into the comb, and off of that goes these arterioles and the veins coming back down, and it's one of the few areas and few times that I've ever seen where an artery can actually branch off and become a vein. It's a very interesting, very intricate network of blood vessels that help to keep the bird's temperature down, and also help to keep the comb from freezing in the winter, and those kinds of things. The artery that we're talking about there, this major facial artery, also would carry some blood to the eyelid, the masseter muscle. The masseter muscle is just a fancy word for the muscle that controls the opening and closing, basically, of the beak. Masseter meaning mastication, chewing, that type of thing. Well, birds don't chew; they do pull and peck and so on, and that would supply the blood to that. So you can see how important this one artery is, not only to the comb, but to the bird for opening and closing its mouth, for movement of the tongue. It also supplies some blood to the eyelid, so opening and closing the eye and having that eye work properly, and all of the blood flow that it would take to do this. That being said, in the middle portion of the comb, and I don't know of any research to support this fact, but in the middle of the comb, more or less, is a mucoid material, M-U-C-O-I-D. And this mucoid material, this is a fact, this part of it, I'll get to the non-factual part, or what I think is the non-factual part. Is a product. You know, you've heard me say before, you've got this little machine in your backyard, and how fascinating it is to be associated with a chicken. A lot of the things that go on in human medicine, in childhood, infant medicine and stuff, come from chickens. We share about 60% of our genome with chickens. And one of the things that happens is this mucoid material is called hyaluronic acid. Now, this hyaluronic acid is very, very unique. It's what supplies the moisture for all of the joints, basically, in the bird's body, and keeps the joints moving and so on. It's unique in the fact that it has the ability to absorb water. It can absorb 6,000 times its weight in water.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is an absolutely amazing thing. Now, here comes a non-factual part, okay? This accumulation of water in the comb may predispose the comb at extremely low temperatures to freezing. I do not know that for fact. It is some conjecture on my part, but having studied it, it makes sense to me. Sometimes things that make sense to me don't always turn out to be the way we want them to, but it would make sense. Now, this hyaluronic acid, again, that little machine you've got in your backyard, this hyaluronic acid is harvested from combs of chickens, and it is what is injected into people's knees to keep their knees going when you have a knee starting to go out on you, and maybe you're too young. Your doctor will tell you you might be too young to have your knee replaced. Maybe you're in your 40s or your 50s. They don't like to do it that early. You may get several injections of this purified hyaluronic acid injected right into your knee to try to bring some moisture and some alleviation of pain from the bone-on-bone that is normally occurring in a deteriorated knee. So these little machines that you've got in your backyard are just absolutely cool. And so the comb is a lot more than you think it is. It is an organ that supplies blood and blood flow for heat regulation. It keeps the comb, for the most part, from freezing. Supplies the moisture or the lubricant, so to speak, for the bird's joints, the wings, the legs, the feet, and so on.
Can you give us the name of that again?
Yeah. Let me see. Hang on a minute. Let me get my brain together here. It's hyaluronic acid. Let me see if I can spell that here for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Hyaluronic, I believe it is. Okay.
Okay, got it.
And it is it is the thing that is highly sought after. Okay. And I guess most people didn't realize how these injections, I know people that have had them, these injections can run $2,000 to $3,000 a pop. So I guess you didn't all know how valuable your chickens were in your backyard. And here you are trying to pump out eggs. Maybe you're going in the wrong direction.
It would absorb 6,000 times?
About 6,000 times its weight, in water. So it's
wow.
A huge sponge. And if you ever, have played around with a chicken's comb, held on to it, besides it being warm to the touch and everything else, if you pull on the comb, it is a little bit elastic, and that's because it does contain what they call collagenic fibers, which are just proteins, and then it contains I can't even think. I hate it when I lose my train of thought. Lord.
That happened to me this morning. I pulled over to the side of the road talking to a couple of friends, and I went through this elaborate story, which actually had an ending or a point that was really unrelated to the story, and I just was like, I have no idea where I was going with this. It wasn't just to tell you that I like this restaurant that y'all recommended, but there was a point to it, and it just, and away it went. And I said, I just got frustrated and drove off. I was already kind of stressed out, but I was like, oh, well, bye. I feel your pain. I feel your pain.
There's a elastogenic factor in the comb as well. All these are proteins. The elastic part of it. These are proteins that are bundled. And the only way I can explain it to you is in like a rubber band or a bungee cord. So when you pull on a bird's comb, a bird's got a good sized comb. You're not going to take a pea comb and try to pull on it and get very much out of it. But when you've got a standard comb on a bird, if you pull on it a little bit, you'll see what I'm talking about. The way the comb feels, the way you can just stretch it a little bit, and it'll go back. It's elastic. It'll go back the way it was. It's kind of like the spandex, so to speak, I guess, could probably fit in the same category. So it's a really
so actually now wait a minute. Our hands and I know that Pat Forman and Christine Heinrichs often talk about taking their hens to the spa for a spa treatments, but you're saying their comb could be the equivalent of Spanx.
Spandex.
Well, I guess there's I guess that's a brand name, but most people are familiar with Spanx, so that's the thing that I thought of about, you know, as people are trying to fit into these clothes, the brand name Spanx, they can then think of the chicken's comb. So hens, I guess in a roundabout way, have their own brand of Spanx with their comb. So I think it's related, you know, what the heck.
Heck, it sounds like it could be, yeah.
You
sounds
the like chat it could be. May agree with me.
Now, the development of the comb starts, you know, in the egg embryonic development. It basically starts there, even though it's minuscule and not necessarily present as a comb per se when a bird is born. But as a bird matures, whether it be male or female, the comb is influenced then by hormones, basically estrogens and testosterone. And as the comb develops, and this is backed by research. This was done by I can't remember their names. They're foreign. They're from Sweden, so their names were something that's a little bit harder for me to pronounce. But anyway, from a university over in Sweden, they had done some research on some birds, looking at the comb. Because we mostly think of the comb as ornamental. Most of us do not think of the comb, as anything other than that. You know, I don't think most people have been taught to look at it in any other fashion. But you might say that the development of a bird's comb in relation to its stature in a flock would be the equivalent of a photograph, so to speak, of, let's say, on a human side, a person one might consider good looking. Most people, however things come about, will be picking a mate or a partner based in part and a great part on looks. And the chicken is not really very much different from that. It has been shown in the research papers that birds who have generally the males will seek out females who have the largest, the brightest, and the most erect combs to mate with. And this is kind of like the same thing you would see in a, let's say, a deer population. A big buck with one antler is certainly not going to be able to mate with a whole lot of females because he's not going to be allowed to by a more dominant buck who still has both of his antlers in place and that kind of thing. And that's why we see in the barnyard, we see, generally speaking, one rooster who is, so to speak, cock of the walk. They seek out these females who have the biggest, brightest, most erect combs. And that goes both ways. The female will be much more, on average, willing to mate with a rooster who has a more erect, more colorful comb and bigger comb as well. The kicker to all of this is that the female that the rooster singles out for this, and in his eyes, she is the best thing since sliced bread. He will breed with her, but he will then ejaculate more sperm into her, and she will produce more of his offspring than a run-of-the-mill hen he might decide to mate with later on. And that's a very, very interesting thing, and you might ask, well, how is that going to happen? The way that happens is that in the vaginal folds of the uterus, the oviduct, the sperm will stay viable in there for, on average, give or take, right around 2 to 3 weeks. The more he mates with her, the more that is there, the more that is there to be to fertilize every egg that she lays. So it is a lot more than just a ornamental thing. From our standpoint as humans, that's how we judge it. We look at it, and I don't think there's anybody that wouldn't walk onto a barnyard, and maybe the first thing they might notice is the bird with the biggest, brightest, most erect comb in the yard, whether it be male or female, and point out that, wow, isn't that pretty, isn't that nice, or that's the biggest comb that I've seen, or whatever the case may be. So, and all of this is influenced by the hormones, blood flow, there are areas of the comb where blood is allowed to accumulate. There are little shunts, so to speak, in the vessels and through the what we call vasoconstriction, which is a constriction of a blood vessel, and then the vasodilation, which is the opening of that blood vessel. So if you have this open, close, squeeze, open, you get this pumping of this blood going through this comb. If you can just picture this in your mind, I mean, it's easy for me because this is something that I've studied all my life, not just the comb, but the whole thing. But look at this as a network then of pipes and tubes and Y's and T's and little curves, and every one of them having a purpose, laying next to itself, going across one way and then coming back across the other way in that pattern, which would be more like a tic-tac-toe board, so to speak. Maybe that's a better analogy here. But just picture that going across the whole comb. So this thing being really engorged with this blood. And as the hormones wane, as a bird is producing and coming to the end of the laying cycle and everything else, we may see that comb lay down. We may see that rooster's comb back off a little bit, and he may not be the guy that he was 2, 3, 4 months ago. Part of the whole thing here is the hormones keeping things going and keeping that blood flow. Not that the blood isn't going to flow without the hormones, but you won't get the volume, you won't get this great vasoconstriction thing, which is forcing the blood in and out and things like that. So it is a big part of the reproductive cycle. It can mean the difference between mediocre chicks and really good chicks. It just depends. It depends on how things are going. More and more, even on the commercial side, they are doing more and more selection for birds that have better combs and that type of thing, and finding out in the long run that that the birds, in some degrees, can be healthier. The bones can be thicker, which means less problems producing eggs, because when the bones are thicker, the calcium is there to take from the bones to put into the eggs until it comes back in the form of the feed and goes back to the bones and back to the eggs. We've talked about it before. We said about 50-52% in that range, maybe a little bit more, maybe a little bit less. Every day a bird has to mobilize that calcium from the bloodstream and lay it down on an egg. It's a phenomenal undertaking. It just is. I mean, if you asked a human being to do these things the way the chickens do, they'd all quit and go on strike, you know. But it is unique, and it is something that is special. And I think that, you know, a lot of the listeners I know realize that they have these special little machines in their backyard. At any rate, the next thing we want to try to do is to understand then how we're going to go about keeping these combs from freezing. Now, the smaller the comb, the less likely you're going to have problems with freezing. But a lot of controversy around heat them, don't heat them, put lamps on them, don't put lamps on them. I will say this. As a general rule, there is not a necessity to heat them to put lamps in the coop and so on and so forth. A lot of things that we do as humans, we do to make ourselves feel good, okay? And in a sense, there's nothing wrong with that, okay? There's nothing wrong with taking the best care of your birds. I'd rather have somebody take the best care of their birds than not take care of them, okay? That being said, there's always the danger of fire, and God only knows we've seen enough of that Andy, I know you've posted many times on Facebook about somebody with a heat lamp, and I did see your USDA thing the other day, which I thought was totally useless. getting up there and just saying don't do it doesn't tell people a whole lot, and especially coming from the government, that's something that I would expect. You know.
Exactly.
You know, I know why you put it up. I know that, and I'm not trying to circumvent that and everything else, but I just looked at it and I said, okay, you know, this didn't tell me very much, because I was even looking to see what she had to say, and she said nothing as far as I was concerned. In other words, she didn't dissipate the reason why. You know, the colder your climate, the more susceptible your bird is going to be having the comb being frozen and so on. And I will tell you this, there is no surefire method as far as I am concerned, nor have I been able to, over the years, find a surefire method that you can say this particular thing used constantly will keep your birds from having a frozen comb. So, excuse me. So with that being said, what can you do to mitigate the circumstances, make those circumstances smaller than they are? And I will say this, because I have researched this out over many, many years, and the simple, easy, straightforward common denominator that comes into play are two things, okay? Keep the wind off your birds and keep the coop dry.
Mm-hmm.
The drier you keep that coop, okay, the less likely you are going to have birds with a frozen comb. Can I sit here and tell you that if you do those things that you won't have frozen combs? No, I cannot. Nobody can. And anybody that tells you they can, I think is going to be full of crap. But that being said, it is important that the humidity in the coop, the humidity be kept as low as possible. Mm-hmm. Because that is a mitigating circumstance for freezing combs. Okay.
The last thing you want to do is, and I had someone had posted this on Facebook, the take, you know, plastic and wrap your coop, make it airtight, and no ventilation, and then put a heater in there. The humidity goes up. The last thing you want to do, breeding nastiness and disease, and it's not good for your birds. Yeah. So, and there's a difference. We've had it explained on the radio show many times. There is a difference between drafts and ventilation.
That's right. That is correct.
And so when your birds are sitting roosting on that roost, and you've got wind blowing right across them from one side of the coop to the other, that's not what we're talking about. You know, the vents at the top of the roof, where you can have some of that air escape and air exchange occur naturally, but no drafts and no drafty coop. Absolutely, very important for both, of course, summer and winter time. But with winter, people think they have to make it airtight and don't let anything get in there, which is really the wrong thing to do. So we do share with that. No wrapping your coop in plastic and making it Fort Knox where no air. We got to have that ventilation. Like you said, very important with the frostbite, because as that humidity builds up, you're going to have moisture. The moisture gets on the comb or the wattles, and then that moisture actually will freeze, thanks to the high humidity, versus, you know, maybe having it, like you said, very, very dry, so that humidity can't build up, so the moisture doesn't build up on the wattle and the combs, and then it won't freeze, or hopefully not. But yeah, I can agree with that too, Peter, regarding the Vaseline or the mineral oil, or like you said, there's, I think, steps you can try to use to help prevent. But I agree too, you're not going to prevent it all the time. But and again, I will stress that people who show these birds, they're on the show circuit all the time, do special things to keep their birds in pristine condition. But again, I think also I always go back to the fact that, you know, the chickens have been domesticated somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000 years, and they seem to be doing just fine.
Yeah, if you feel that you have to put some sort of heater in there for frozen combs or whatever the thing, if it's a feel-good thing for yourself or whatever the case. While I have not used it, I have read a ton of reviews of this sweeter heater.
Yep.
And while they are somewhat expensive, it would look like to me if they were, certainly if they were properly hung and everything else, I don't think there'd be a problem. Again, with that being said, I do want to go over some things that would be helpful that people might not be thinking about in order to condition birds for the cold weather.
I had a question in Facebook, and we're going to go to break. We'll come back to that.
Sure.
Valid question, because we talk about, and people always comment about, you know, hey, if you're heating your birds in the wintertime, it's negative 15 all the time there. You have a very cold climate, and the power goes out. You may come out to dead birds because they're not acclimated, and all of a sudden the shock to them is not going to be good for them. If they survive, they may be dead. So a question more realistic to that was posted on Facebook today, where a lady is moving from Florida to North Carolina. Not, she's not going to Michigan or Wisconsin or Vermont, but Florida to North Carolina. And her question was that based on them not being acclimated, if she moves here in the winter and there'll be a huge temperature or a bigger, we know North Carolina and Florida, but a temperature change, she was wondering if that would validate her for a while anyway, using a heater or a heat source in the coop to help them get, since they're not acclimated. So we'll get your response to that here.
Sure.
When we come back from break. And I see that Pat Foreman had posted in the chat room earlier that we noticed Pat is in caller queue. So when we come back from break, we'll bring on Pat Foreman and say hello to her, and we'll get Peter's answer to that question about moving a flock from Florida to North Carolina. Not a huge, huge, big difference, but it could be in the wintertime, especially what the weather is when they actually get to North Carolina with their birds, if she could justify using a heater to help get them, since they're not acclimated to that maybe colder nights than what they're experiencing in Florida. So great, great topic there. So stay with us, folks. We'll be back. We're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, and we're talking all about the comb, and we'll return right after this short break.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
And, of course, a little bit later in the show, we're going to be giving away one lucky listener, one of these.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
This looks like a job for
Super Chicken.
You get the super sauce, I'll don my super suit.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. As stated here, in just a little bit, we'll be giving away a chicken fountain watering system. I've already got the trivia question written down here, so hopefully you've been paying attention during the show. That's all I'm going to say. So, yeah, like I said, a little earlier on, after we had brought Peter on, I noticed that Pat was in a caller queue. Mentioned it in the chat room a little earlier that the next break we would try to bring her on. Let's see if she's on or off mute, rather. Pat Foreman, are you there?
Yes, I am off mute. Hey, yes, Whisper. I muted myself out, too. Yes, I'm here. Thank you for bringing me on. Peter, this has been an absolutely fascinating discussion of combs. I've taken notes here. I've been banging away on my computer with a lot of your comments. So
yeah,
thank you for sharing this. Yeah. And Whisper, thanks for bringing me on. Boy, you've got a busy, busy time coming up, don't you? I mean, you must be – good thing you're so organized is all I can say.
No, there's a fine line there between organized and OCD.
Oh, gosh, we've all got that. You know, sometimes I don't have my focus from going up from my office to the kitchen. I get, what do I need to come out here for? Oh, a cup of tea, you know. There's just so much coming at us all the time, and it's getting faster. Yeah.
It's time to just sometimes try to veg out and put our thumb and index finger together and go home.
Absolutely. You know, I swear by my sauna, Whisper. I go in with a little bit of a I'm not sure tense factor, and I just come out a new woman. It's like, oh, world really is beautiful. You just sweat it out, literally.
Go in kicking and screaming. Cussing, and you come out all relaxed and ready to attack the world.
Yeah, well, ready to basically go to sleep.
Oh,
take your shower and go to sleep. Peter, I've got a question that I've been wanting to ask you for a very long time, and this fits in really well right now. May I?
Go ahead.
Okay. I have never observed a rooster with his head under his wing, even in the coldest of times. I've seen my roosters with their heads under other hens' wings. Can they not physically do that, or is it breed dependent, or am I just is this just an observation that doesn't really hold up?
I have never seen them do it either. I haven't seen them do it under a hen's wing, let alone their own.
Mine cuddle up. They get pretty close.
Yeah. Well, they may do it that, but my gut feeling is it, and again, I have no hard evidence to back this up other than observations like your own, but it probably goes back to the wild days. How can I say this? If you got your head up your butt, you can't find out what's going on. So it's their job as the males to keep their...
You're not projecting now, are you, Peter?
to keep their head out of their butt and be alert. So that it might go back to some of that.
I can understand that. I don't hear as well when my head's under the covers as when it's not.
Well, genetics plays a big role in a lot of the things that they do. You know, for instance, if you go back to the wild jungle fowl, they did not produce anywhere near the eggs that birds produce mm-hmm. today. Genetically, we've, you know, so to speak, engineered our birds today to produce the eggs because, you know, humans want the eggs. We want them for protein and what have you. So, therefore, the wild jungle fowl, they were able to fly much more readily than birds today because of the fact that their bones were lighter and did mm-hmm. not contain the amount of calcium that birds contained.
Interesting.
So
interesting.
A lot of things, you know, could be a genetic throwback to that. Other than that, I can't expand upon that much more. But it is an observation, but it would seem to me that being more alert than not being alert, because that's their job. You know, that's part of their job. And
now, I've always wondered where when you close your eyes, put your fingers in your ears, and go la 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 la.
You're singing. Yes.
It never really seems to make whatever is there disappear. So you're probably correct there.
Maybe that's why they'll crow throughout the night, is they don't really want to hear certain things, so they'll just go, wah, 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 wah.
It could be. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of what goes on, you know, again, genetically is influenced by a lot of things, you know. I don't know whether you were on with us when we talked about, you know, their sense of smell and how we could influence mm-hmm. their sense of smell during the incubation process. And I've said this before on this show, there is ample research out now to show that on the human side, you know, people who may be gay or whatever, it's not a choice generally. It is something that has happened to them genetically during the gestation period that has changed something genetically, whether it was heat, cold, chemical substances, or whatever. I don't think they've put their finger on what the cause is, but they have defined it as being something along. And we see the same thing with chickens. We can alter the temperature of the birds for a few days during incubation, and we can make those birds come out and be more tolerant of cold and more tolerant of heat just by changing the temperature of incubation up or down a couple of degrees for 3 or 4 days towards the tail end of the incubation process. Actually, I think it's 2 days, and so we can do that. So we know again, humans and chickens sharing roughly 60% of their genome. There's a lot of extrapolations that can be made there, but and I don't know if they use the chicken model to help get to that point. But we do know that what happens during incubation can influence the outcome of the type, quality, and so on of the chicks that you have. If you look around on the commercial side, you'll see now a lot of companies are going to some very high-tech incubators trying to alter the way that chicks are handled during the hatching process. Because it's mm-hmm. critical, and and I know this is off topic. Doesn't matter. We'll come back to the topic in a minute, but because I think this is very, very important to understand, these birds when they're first hatched out, you know, we say they have about 72 hours of yolk material. Well, if I hatch out at midnight and Harriet next to me is still in the egg here and she ain't out until 8 o'clock in the morning, I got an 8-hour head start on her. And we're both going to be shipped in the same box across country, and guess what? I may poop out before her, you see. So it is better to try to have as many birds as possible hatch at relatively the same time and then pull them from that hatch and get them to food and water as quick as possible. We know that this is a huge, huge difference in how birds grow, how they mature, how they will end up at the end of the day. So all of this becomes very, very important. And when you start seeing the commercial people start putting more emphasis on it, you know it's real. They're not going to spend the money on these incubators. And I was reading the other day about, I can't remember which company it was. It was a company now that the incubator is going to be so sophisticated now that it will sense when the birds start to hatch and will change the temperature automatically. Don't have to wait for somebody to do something. It's going to change the temperature automatically and adjust things so that they get the maximum hatch at one time so those birds can be pulled out and gotten out to the farm or wherever they're going to go. You know, so the time of hatch pull, the time that birds actually hatch, because I was in that business for Roseacre Farms. I ran the hatchery for years, and the thing is trying to get them to hatch on some sort of a schedule where humans are involved, and then, you know, for the majority of the time, you're not going to want them to hatch before 8 o'clock in the morning because people don't want to work at 5 o'clock in the morning, as a general rule. You know, I mean, obviously there are people that do, but by and large, average person doesn't want to get up at 3 in the morning to get to work at 5 and stand around pulling chicks all day. So generally, you know, the settings are made, for the most part, to try to accommodate humans at the same time and more or less forgetting that we really have a live embryo here trying to develop and finish hatching out, and we should be paying more attention to that. Attention to details. I've said it before. I'll say it again. When incubation, it's all been figured out for you. The science part, the art part is up to you and how well you define yourself as doing the art part of it, that little touch, that little extra thing that you do that makes a difference at the end of the day in the quality of the bird that you're going to put out. That quality means livability at the end of the day. That means a bird that we went back and we said about 65-70% of the bird's immune cells are in its intestine. Lousy intestine, lousy bird, okay? And if the bird isn't being nourished when it needs to be, okay, you're going to have a bird that has an impaired immune system. You're going to have problems and everything else. So it runs up the medication costs. And generally speaking, birds that don't get off to a good start don't have a good finish. And that's documented over the years. They just don't.
That's you're absolutely right, Peter, especially with keeping the intestinal up, you know, healthy and up to date, mm-hmm. but also it's all through your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, some of these incubators are getting really, really snazzy. I'm starting to have incubator envy, you know, with the new GQF digital. You're like, oh gosh.
Well, they've just
come. You're going to talk a little bit.
They've just come with a digital thing coming into the 21st century, though. But I mean, they've come.
Yeah,
you know.
I know.
And I mean, the incubators that I'm talking about, you know, are far and beyond that type of thing. There are incubators being put out that will adjust the temperature automatically for the specific period of time because you can't drop the temperature for 2 degrees or whatever it is for that 4-hour period of time and then take 6 hours to get the temperature back up. It has to be a quick drop, couple of hours or whatever it is, and then right back up to where it needs to be as quick as possible, or you can have other problems. So there are these. They are making these. Some of them are still in the developmental thing where they've used smaller incubators and now I'm going to the big incubators. But it is phenomenal. It is like I said before, it's a great time to be alive to see all of these innovative things that come along. Some will be good, some will not be so good. We know that. But by changing the outcome of a hatch, whether it be birds that are going to go and live in Saudi Arabia where it's hotter than Hades, or they're going to go to Alaska where it's colder than whatever. So having a bird that can more easily acclimate itself to that because of the incubation process is huge. It's huge. Both,
wow.
both in dollars and cents, which is what most commercial companies are after, but also on the other end for the comfort and well-being of the bird. So
When Jen starts to have contractions and her water breaks, I'm going to pack her in ice.
She may not like that.
I don't want to be there for that one.
I'm going to put all the blame on you, Peter. I'm like, no, seriously, Peter Brown. He had a whole show on this. So hang on a minute, Doc. We need to pack her in ice. She's starting to have some contractions. Her water broke. Pack her in ice because, you know, it's...
We're gonna acclimate it to the cold temperatures down there in Georgia.
Absolutely.
I wanted to touch on the preventative things we can do to help mitigate some of these instances where combs might freeze and give people a little bit of an insight as to why you want to keep the air off of birds. You don't want the breeze blowing on them and that kind of thing. So I'm not a weatherman, by the way, so if I say something here that's out of tune with what somebody else might know, so be it. The condition of a bird is going to be huge in how it handles that cold. We talked about this earlier or late last year. I can't remember when it was. It was late last year. We talked about exposure to cold and rain and birds being wet and then being exposed to cold temperatures and things of this nature, and how the corticosteroids would kick in and give the flight or flight syndrome, and where a bird's immune system would be impaired by that steroid, so that all hands are on deck to take care of the problem that is arising right at the moment, and therefore open up a bird possibly to other diseases and problems and certainly death being part of that. But we talked about lowering the core body temperature, okay? And we said that birds could tolerate a lower temperature body-wise than they could a higher temperature. And we all know the reason they can't sweat and so on and so forth. So all of these things being considered, if you've got birds that are sick, if you've got birds that are underweight, if you've got birds that are not being properly nourished, and we all know that happens. We've had people call in on this show before where they would feed them just corn, if you remember, and expect them to lay eggs. Not going to happen, okay? And things of this nature, if you have your birds in good flesh, I don't mean a fat bird. A fat bird's not a healthy bird, okay? But I mean a bird that is in good flesh, got a nice breast on it, got a nice red comb, nice feathers, fully feathered out and everything else. They're going to fare out a heck of a lot better in the cold weather than is a bird that is ill-prepared, just like a human. I mean, if you're not prepared to be outside on a real cold day where the temperature's down around 20 degrees, you're going to have a problem. And whether it be your overall body weight, your fat content, or what you've been eating, have not been eating, or whatever, if you're not in good shape, you're not going to survive it so well. You may survive it, but you may not be very happy about it at the end of the day. So I would do a couple of things. I would limit treats, and we've talked about that on our show before. Birds really don't need them. It's a you thing. It's for you, not for them. And it doesn't hurt to do it. I'm not against it totally. Just don't overdo it. And take your bag of scratch and throw it away. Totally useless as far as I'm concerned. Birds key in on it. They key in on certain ingredients in there that they like. They wait on it. We've seen this time and time. This is documented where birds will wait and not eat their normal food that you're providing for them and this kind of thing. And again, these birds are going to be ill-prepared to go into this type of a situation with not enough body fat, not enough muscle mass, not enough feathering, not enough body heat being produced. Okay? One of the other things you can do is feed the birds late in the day, as late as they'll take the feed, even if you kind of half withhold the feed a little bit so that they go to bed at night and they got a full crop of food to take them through the night. You don't want to, feed a bird at 4 o'clock, put everybody away, and nobody's got access to food, even if it gets dark at that time, or 5 o'clock or whatever. We want them to have a full crop because birds who, and this goes for humans or any other animal, as they digest their food, they give off the most valuable thing they can use in that period of time, heat. Heat. And a bird can give off, depending on the size of the bird, anywhere between 5 and 10 watts of heat over the course of the night. Okay? The other thing you're going to want to do is provide ample space for them to roost. We want them to be snuggled up and close to each other and getting that body heat and exchanging it back and forth, okay? We want all of that. So these are all things that you can do. If your coop is wet and there's not a whole lot you can do about it, buy a dehumidifier. Get that humidity out of there and keep the temperature as stable as you can. There are things that you can do. As far as putting things on the comb, there's pros and cons to all of it. I'll just run through two or three things that we are actually testing in two different locations, one over in the Shenandoah Valley and one here about 20 miles south of me And we've had some pretty cold temperatures here. The temperature right now outside is about 32, so it's right in that range. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to get some data. We're trying to take the comb temperature prior to applying one of three ingredients, and one of them is Vaseline, one of them is Vetrex, and one of them is a comb reddening product that makes a claim to help reduce frozen combs. The Vetrex, the way that the Vaseline would work would be to prevent the radiation of heat away from the comb and try to hold the heat closer to the comb. The downside to that particular thing is it can get messy. As the you put it on the bird's comb and you massage it in, it's a mess for them, it's a mess for you. They put their head under their wing, they've got it everywhere. They get down in the dust bath in the morning, and first thing you know, it's stuck everywhere. You know, if it mitigates the problem and you don't get a frozen comb from it, so be it. I'll take the dirt over the frozen comb any day. The Vetrex, camphorated oil, basically, oil of balsam, oil of oregano, in a corn oil base, a good product. What this would be designed to do would be with you rubbing it into the comb. And this takes time, so not everybody's going to have this kind of time. These are things that you can do, and that's going to stimulate the blood flow to the comb. It's going to stimulate those arterioles, those capillary blood vessels, that microcirculation that we were talking about earlier, okay? It's going to stimulate all of that and hopefully keep that blood flow going. How long it'll last, I don't know. So what our goal here is to do is to take the temperature prior to putting it on, put it on, take the temperature afterward, and see what it looks like in the morning after it's been a cold night. And now whether I'll actually get all this data together or not, I don't know. I've asked people to do it. I've provided everything that they needed to do such, and we'll see where it goes from there. The other thing is this comb reddening product, which we will have on our website over the next couple of days for mm-hmm. sale. It is more than likely a pepper-based product, probably cayenne pepper. That's my guess. It'll have instructions to, you know, not to get in your eyes and whatever. So, but it's used for two purposes: making a comb red for show, and also for mitigating the problem with a frozen comb. And again, the stimulation of the blood vessels in the comb to circulate the blood closer and closer to and pump up those capillaries and those arterioles and the veins and the arteries and everything and get all of that blood as close to the surface and as hot as possible may help the birds, you know, from being, you know, victims of the frozen comb. So you want to make sure the birds are hydrated. Having enough water to digest food and digest food properly, you know, is going to be good. Birds don't need warm water, so you don't need to even do that. Just give them the water. As long as it's not frozen, they will readily drink cold water above 32 degrees all the time. Okay? I know there's an exception somewhere. I'm not talking about that. On average, everything we talk about is generally on average for birds. There are always, in most cases, exceptions to the rule. Now, I went out and did a little something else, and here's the weatherman part. I don't know nothing about this. But, you know, we all talk about wind chill. And this is a so-called temperature reading to give you a discomfort factor, so to speak. And basically what it is a temperature that stays constant with a wind that is variable. And they calculate then if the temperature is X and the wind speed is X, then it feels like this to your skin. And it is a situation where as the air temperature stays the same and the wind speed picks up, you will have a more rapid loss of heat through the skin, therefore in a bird through the comb. So I cannot overemphasize the importance of this wind factor that we were talking about before. Again, I said the two most important factors in the beginning were the wind, drafts, and the humidity in that coop.
Mm-hmm.
If you can control those things, I think you're going to be okay in most cases. Now, bear in mind, when we talk about lowering the body core temperature and you get that body temperature down real low, you're not going to have hot blood running through this bird. You're going to have cold blood going through this bird, so to speak. So you do need to be cognizant of that as well. So I thought it would be prudent here to throw in some ideas about hypothermia. We talked about that last year. We'll go back through it again. Birds who when you observe them, may be shaking, just like a human would. It's not normal, and they are too cold. Okay? These may be instances for you to break out a heat lamp, a sweeter heater. Okay? I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying that there is a break point where the welfare of the bird becomes paramount in my eyes. And I've never really advocated putting heat lamps out, but I realize in some instances, whatever they are, there is a need. But, you know, you need to be prudent about what you do. If you take the temperature of the bird and you see that the temperature of the bird is low, we normally look for a body temperature in a bird anywhere from 105 to 107. When you start getting a lot below that, you start having a bird that's going into hypothermia. Pale or blue comb. When you open the mouth should be nice and reddish pink, and it's not, and it starts to look dark and cyanotic looking, which is a lack of oxygen. You've got a problem. Birds who are not breathing normally, that their every breath seems to be a chore, this is all signs of hypothermia. The skin may start to turn dark on you as a bird really gets low with that low body temperature. So just be aware of all these things. I am a big fan of being informed. That's what this program is about. That's what I do is about, to make everybody understand as best we can. You know, the more information you have, the more informed you are, the better off you are. So just to give you an idea, I ran a couple of temperatures with a wind chill. And if you had a temperature of 20 degrees outside, and the wind speed was roughly 5 miles per hour, it would feel on your skin and on your bird's skin like it was 13 degrees outside. Okay. Now, if we keep the temperature stable, that's the fooling part of all of this, because you look at the temperature, you say, well, the temperature's not bad, still 20 degrees, it was that way 5 hours ago, but the wind's picked up to 10 miles an hour. Okay. We now lose another 4 degrees in wind chill factor. So now it feels like 9 degrees, okay? And, again, a more rapid loss of body heat through the skin, through the comb, and everything else, okay? So let's go and drop the temperature down to 15 degrees and go with that 5-mile-an-hour wind speed, and we now have a wind chill of 7 degrees, and we'll keep the temperature again at 15, and we'll come back and go to 10 miles an hour. Now you've got 3 degrees above zero as a wind chill factor. That's pretty cold. That's pretty cold. And recently here we had some heavy winds. Maybe some of the people in the Carolinas, I know in Tennessee and stuff, had some really cold.
Oh, yeah.
We had some really cold temperatures here. And if I had a nickel for every time I said, wouldn't be bad out here for one for that wind. But it was still, you know, 18 degrees out as a temperature reading was concerned.
Yep, said that this week. I think it was maybe it was Friday, and yep. I told Jenna the exact same thing. I said, you know, it'd be a really nice, pleasant day, short sleeve day, if this wind wasn't blowing.
Yeah, that's why the wind chill factor thing was basically developed to make people understand that, you know, the wind and the temperature itself have a relationship. Okay. And there is a difference. And I'll tell you, when you get down around 3 degrees with the wind blowing, that's pretty cold. And it's going to be pretty cold for your birds. So use common sense. If you're one of those people that you just can't stand to see your birds be out there with it, if you decide that you need a heat lamp or something, go spend the money for one of those sweeter heaters. Put it up with chains that can't be knocked down, can't fall down, nothing can fall on it. And,
exactly.
You know, put a padlock on the damn thing if you have to. You know,
back up,
if you're going to do it right. Just put it up there with nuts and bolts and the whole bit so it doesn't come down and you never have a fire and you never have a problem and your birds will be happy. You'll feel good, and I'm cool with that. But, you know, you need to be as careful and as prudent with these things as you can be. And, you know, they're your charges. You took them on, and they are dependent upon you. This is no different than trying to rear a child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I hate to, you know, to be out here, you know, preaching that stuff, because all of it's hard. All of it's hard at the end of the day.
Pat, the good news is it sounds like that you're okay by giving your chickens your frozen stink bugs.
If they eat them, they can get over stink bugged, I found.
There was an article, Pat, last week, I believe it was, an article about what to do with all these stink bugs, and then it was, you know, comma, feed them to your chickens. It was a whole article about, you know, a family, I don't know, feeding their chickens stink bugs, and someone's...
Yeah.
People posted. I said, you know, mine won't eat them. Mine don't like them. They don't touch them. And I said, well, maybe the trick is you have to put them in a mason jar in the freezer and occasionally sprinkle them on top of their food like Pat Forman does. Maybe that does something with the stink or the smell or the taste. But hers love the frozen stink bugs. And she has it. So it sounds like the stink bugs are okay. Scratch, not so much. And I don't think any of us... Pat, Peter, and myself, I don't really think we would be doing injustice if we really discounted the great benefits of a nice little crocheted hat.
That's
for,
right, and booties.
And booties for the chickens, yes. I don't think we don't need to be discounting that. The nice little crocheted hat with the ear flaps, which can go a long way to keeping the combs from freezing.
I don't discount anything that is going to be beneficial for the bird. It's up to the individual. And I know I see all the time, Facebook, other places, people have little hats and whatever. Hey, if it floats your boat, I'm okay with it. You know, again, it goes back to what I'm saying. It's an individual's responsibility when you take it on that this is part of your job. And I think, you know, the majority of the people, you know, recognize that. Don't mean to be thinking that people that listen to the show are not cognizant of that fact, but you got to throw it out there for that person that may be new and doesn't understand or whatever.
Kidding aside, if I have a hen especially that hasn't feathered out, mm-hmm. this time of year, I'll put one of those little hen aprons with the little shoulder pads on them, and she just looks so happy and pleased with herself that she's running around with a little cape and the others aren't.
Why not? I don't see where it hurts. You know, one bit at the end of the day. You know, after all, at the end of the day, it is the welfare of the birds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you come right down to it. So,
Peter, speaking of welfare, now if you do get frostbite in some of those roosters with single combs or exotic combs or whoever, what do you suggest you do besides the little mittens and hat?
I think it. You know, if you're getting frostbite, you got to figure out how you're going to mitigate the thing and not have it happen again. You know, some birds, again, trying to get them all to roost together, I think is a paramount thing that I would want to get done. That would be one of my big deals. If I had a bird that ended up with some frostbite, however big or little. I would look for any way that I could to try to mitigate that. I know that sometimes you get a couple of birds, they're loners and they go off by themselves and they'll roost in a different spot. But as best you can, try to get everybody together. Now, if it happens, there really isn't a whole lot you can do about it. Once it turns black, it's dead tissue and it's just like humans with frostbite. And it generally it'll end up falling off by itself. But keep an eye on it. You want to make sure there's no infection going on, some Neosporin or some triple antibiotic ointment or anything like that. Many times you don't have to do anything. It'll just fall off, and that'll be the end of it. The thing you have to watch for is you can't let other birds start pecking on it and let the bird become a peck out in the flock. So, but once it happens, there isn't much you can do about it other than keep it from happening again. And you know, not that I'm aware of. I mean, I've been, you know, like Andy and Pat and whatever, we've been doing this a long time, and there is no magic thing that I'm aware of that you can do that's going to prevent this 100%. But there are things, like I said, went through, and I still go back and say the two biggest factors are the humidity and the wind, the draft.
Mm-hmm.
that constant draft. Just think about it for yourself. If you're standing in a doorway somewhere and the wind's blowing and everything else and how cold that is for you, it's just as cold for your birds. It's not, you know, it's not
Peter, would you
science.
Say a little bit about their feet and preventing frostbite on those little toes?
Well,
there are some things that you can do to mitigate that.
The same thing there. If they're roosting, the generally you're not going to see that because it's going to be up under the breast area and they're generally going to be covered. You do not want things that are going to give you problems. For instance, metal. I don't like plastic.
Right. No metal roosts. That's
yep.
one thing.
Yeah. Of those kinds that are going to really hold that cold in there, so that they will end up with frostbite. Again, birds that have to stand around and muck all day long and then sit on a roost at night and the stuff freezes on their feet, that's a problem. And that's up to the keeper to take care of that. You know, again, goes back to what we were saying, moisture, moisture, moisture. And
Peter, one of the things I've found that helps is if some people just provide a flat roosting area, mm-hmm. then the birds, and I've found that if they can curl around preferably a routed board or some sort of a limb, mm-hmm. and then they snuggle those little feathers, breast feathers, right down around their feet. Mm-hmm. They are just as toasty warm as can be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's one
part,
of the things, like you were saying, is get them up off the ground and on a roost, and then preferably together. But
providing too much roosting space is just as bad as not providing enough. Okay. If you provide too much roosting space, those that don't particularly care to be associated maybe with other birds will go off and roost by themselves, and now you've got another problem. You've got two roosting over here, and you've got 10 roosting over here. The two that are roosting together, present a problem to themselves because of lack of heat all the way around, being over there by themselves and so on. There are other things that you might want to do. If you've got a coop that's got a high ceiling in it, you might want to consider lowering the ceiling, bringing
mm-hmm.
the heat down closer to the birds.
Thank you.
Even if you did it temporarily, even if you did it with plastic, something is better than nothing. The exchange of air, if you're going to have an air exchange, you're probably better off to have the air exchange be up high, and, yep, you're going to be letting out some of your heat, but you also won't get that stagnant air in the coop. Now, to give you an example, you all know that Tammy will be moving here fairly soon, and we're coming to the closing finish here on the coop that we've got going. Actually, there's a holdup now, putting the fence out there, and they started this past week putting some posts in the ground and so on. But inside, and we'll take pictures of this and put it all up when the time's appropriate and stuff, what we've done. But I intend to use it as well as experiment with different things. Right in the center of the coop in the ceiling, and this has a relatively high ceiling, we put a multiple speed fan, and I got this from one of the poultry company suppliers here that builds chicken houses and everything else. I went over there and talked to people, and I got one that I can regulate. So I can move the air up, down, and around. I can reverse it and everything else. And it only cost about $100, which I didn't think was very bad. It cost more than I'd have it put in. And then, for washing the coop down, all of the electrical, I didn't want it in the wall so that the wires would get wet and there'd be rot behind the walls and that sort of thing. So we had all of the electrical switches and everything else put in conduit, and the boxes are all covered with a nice clear plastic thing. You got to lift it up to get into the switch or the socket or
nice.
Whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
More costly, but we're trying to do something here so that when we want to clean it out, it isn't a monumental chore. And I realize the cost of it because, it is what it is. And I will have to at some point as summertime comes around. Look at, air conditioning this to some degree. Now, we're not talking about air conditioning down to 60 degrees, but when it's, 90 out, I can't have them cooped up in the middle of the night in here. So our plan is, at this point, cameras in the coop to look at a large thermometer that will tell us what temperature we have.
Nice.
Yeah, well, you know, again, we owe it to the birds. You know, they didn't ask to come here. You know, they're here because they're hers and mine, and you know, they're our charges, and it's up to us to make them comfortable. Again, you know, I live in an area not supposed to have roosters, and there are a fair amount of roosters in here. The saving grace here is they're all bantams. And so, you know, when they decide to crow, you know, it's not going to ricochet 40 miles away and come back. But that being said, you know, when they get cooped up at night, you know, they can't be let out before it's a reasonable hour in the morning. You know, I don't foresee any of it being a problem. It's just that I've already got the design and stuff done. The only other thing we have to do now is, you know, get an air conditioner and put it in there. And on one end of the coop, we've made a area there. There are some cats that are not house cats and are strictly outside cats. And we've made a nice area for them that will be on the opposite end of the chicken coop.
Well, that'll keep your mice down.
Yeah, so they can get in and out on that
side.
They won't be able to interact with the chickens, but the airflow will be the same all the way across. And they'll have their own access into a yard outside where the cats can go out and play and do whatever they do during the day. And the chickens will have the whole end of the opposite end of the place there. Where so far I've got, I think it's over 100 running feet of fence going to be put up that will encompass where the chickens will have their playtime and stuff, and we're going to be planting some herbs and stuff in there, and I'll go into that later on because I have a whole thing. I have a kit coming out very, very soon that will have a whole bunch of really good organic products for people to use, not only for mitigating some intestinal problems, but a very good organic feed as well that I'm considering handling and probably looks like I'm going to. So it's some things that we're doing, and we're going to be testing out some things here. These birds will be raised on this particular feed and stuff here as well. So whole lot going on, whole lot of stuff. I hope that what we've done here today has given some folks an insight into, you know, how the comb is, how it works. It's more than just that pretty little red thing sitting on top of a bird's head. And hopefully we've given everybody some idea on how to take care of it and you not get into any problems associated with freezing combs. I think I've hit on all the points.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know,
Yep, it is. It's prize time. We've got a prize if you want to hang out because you've got the answer to the question we're going to ask here. And the prize, of course, is a chicken fountain from chickenfountain.com. And that we need to give away. So what we're going to do, everybody that's listening live, of course, you're eligible to win this prize. And Peter will be the final judge because he has the answer. Hopefully, we're paying attention during during the show. So what we're going to do is we're going to have Pat. First off, we'll have Pat pick the winning caller. Let's go with that, Pat. Which number do you like today?
Oh, okay. Let's do a dozen. Let's do a complete dozen today.
Okay, we're going with 13. Oh, no, sorry.
No, it was 11.
Oh, 11. Yeah, that's right. 11 was a number in the teens, exactly.
Silly you.
And so we'll go with caller number 12, if you know the answer to the following question. And that is, earlier in the show, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, commented on a particular acid that can retain 6,000 times its weight in water. A particular acid that's found in the comb that can, I think, absorb or retain 6,000 times its weight in water. What is the name of that acid? Caller number 12 right now at 347-637-3237. That's 347-637-3237. If you remember the name of that acid Peter talked about, then you have a chance to win if you call number 12, that awesome chicken fountain water system from chickenfountain.com. While we give everybody a chance to call in, we'll go to a short break, and we come back. We'll have Peter, we'll bring caller number 12 on the air and see if they've got the right answer, and Peter will confirm if they have the right answer or not. So stay tuned. We'll be back, hopefully, with a winner.
Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Did we lose Pat? Let me see. No, there's Pat Foreman there in the caller queue. There we go. Alrighty, so everybody is back. We're going to go to call number 12. Now, just to give you a little heads up, if you're a first-time caller or listener, when I bring caller 12 live and say the area code that they're calling from and it's not you, don't automatically hang up, because the issue there is they may get the answer wrong, and then we'll actually go to the next caller, which would be caller then 13. So if they've said the right answer, then I guess you can go ahead and hang up at that point. But just to give you a little tidbit of information regarding that. So let me go down here and try to find number 12 here. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And we do have a caller queue. We can take up to 50 callers at once. So Pat picked number 12. So let me go here and go to your opinion. Which probably sees somebody's probably infiltrating our perimeter, Peter.
I'm barking.
Yes, somebody has infiltrated our perimeter, and Penny is letting me know. Okay, caller. Here we go. Caller number 12. We're bringing you on right now from area code. Let the button work here. 208. 208. You're on the air with Peter, Pat, and Andy. Hey, that's a 60s group, isn't it? No, that's different. Peter, Pat, and Andy. I gotta go catch a jet plane, right? Okay.
That's right.
Let's see. Caller 208, you're live on the air. State your name and where you're calling from, please.
Hi, this is Becca Smith. I'm in Boise, Idaho.
Becca from Boise, Idaho. All right. Now, of course, Peter, you'll be the judge here.
Yep.
He was talking about an acid that will actually retain, absorb 6,000 times its weight in water that's found in the comb. He also talked and mentioned the relation to that to knee shots for your knee. What is the name of that acid?
It's hyaluronic acid.
That's right.
Yep. That is
Yay.
Right.
Oh. Somebody actually pays attention to this show, eh?
Yes.
Well, that's good.
Yes. So,
it was very informational.
And Idaho. Yes. Always Mondays are awesome with Peter Brown. He joins us every single Monday with great topics related to our backyard flocks. Yep, one of the popular shows that we've got here. So congratulations. Before in order to claim your prize, the chicken fountain, I need you to send me an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. That's contest@chickenwhisperer.net. And in the subject line, please put chicken fountain. We've got several people doing the coop contest. But in the subject line of your email out in Boise, put chicken fountain as the subject line. And then in the email itself, I need your name, your shipping address, your phone number, and then if you'll type in your email address under your phone number in the email itself, that would be very helpful. So then I'll get that over to Frank at Chicken Fountain, and I'm sure he'll get that and contact you to see which one's best for your flock and get one of those shipped out to you as soon as possible. So if you'll send me that email, we'll get you out your prize. So how awesome is that, Peter? Peter Brown, today our special guest is every Monday, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. If they don't carry it, let me tell you, you don't need it. So FirstStateVetSupply.com. Check that out. Get all your supplies that you need from there. They've got a great medicine kit, not a first aid kit, but they have a, don't get confused, an awesome medication kit to keep on hand so you can immediately treat your birds when you see something wrong until you can, if needed to be, order more of that. So you don't have to order this 5 gallons of this or all of this or all of that. You've got what you need to get started, and it's a very reasonable price. FirstStateVetSupply.com. Peter, thank you very much for joining us, as always.
My pleasure.
Hope a wonderful week, and we'll see you next Monday.
Okay, we'll see you there.
Thank you very much. And Pat, thank you for joining us, and I'll just turn it over to you and say, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Whisper. And again, thanks, Peter. I learned so much about combs today I had no idea about. What a wealth of information. Thanks to all our chat room chickeneers for clicking in and calling in and tuning in. And, of course, blogtalkradio.com provides the radio, the chat, and the video services. We need to get video back here, Whisper. You see your handsome face. Andy Schneider is the Chicken Whisperer, the creator of this show, and, of course, the wind beneath our wings, which is why we can fly so far. Today is Marvelous Monday. A reminder, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's no show tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
Whisper. Yeah. Terrific Tuesday. Yeah.
And
correct. I'm Pat Forman, and from all of us, absolutely all of us, may the flock be with you. All those who want it throughout all the land, may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody. Oh.